Here now is the moderator of the American Forum, Mr. Stephen McCormick.
This is the motion picture capital of the world, fabulous Hollywood. And here on the American Forum today is a group of people responsible for making the films you see, the men behind the scenes, the men who write about them, the men who make the decisions here in Hollywood. Don Hotman, recently chief of production at Paramount Pictures and now head of Hotman Productions. George Stevens, winner of 2 Academy Awards and director-producer of Shane and the forthcoming Giant. Jerry Wald, for many years executive producer at Columbia Pictures, who now heads the Wald Productions at 20th Century Fox. Leah Rostin, special editorial advisor to Look magazine, author and critic on the Hollywood scene. Well, gentlemen, the motion picture business is advertising that movies are better than ever. Are they really? Mr. Hotman, how do you feel about it?
Well, I think that better pictures are better than they ever were before, and that more people do come to them in greater numbers, and that life is better than it ever was, and everything in the country has advanced, and it's not odd that along with it, Hollywood has, through the years, learned a great deal and has used that information to improve it. So I think they're definitely better.
Mr. Wall.
Well, you know, Steve, it's interesting to note that since the advent of television, the 20 top grossing pictures made, I'd say that 10 of them have been released since television came into its own full bloom. And obviously, from this, just in the box office figures, pictures have been better than ever because more people are going to see them. The good pictures, that is.
Let me go to Mr. Rostin and ask him the same question.
Well, when people ask if movies are better, they really want to say, I wish they were better. And my answer to that is a depressing one. Movies are as good as the talent that's available. And in movies, as in any other field, there isn't enough talent to go around. There aren't enough good scientists, there aren't enough good writers, there aren't enough good playwrights, there aren't enough good anythings to turn out as much product as the movies are committed to week after week after week. You don't have enough good novels, plays, stories, or ideas. Within that framework, the movies which are being made have fewer bad movies than before. Whether the good ones are better or not, I don't know.
George Stevens, how do you feel about it?
Well, all things progress, and I do suppose movies are better than ever, but we might say they're not as good as they should be, generally.
They could be a little better.
And probably there are some liberalizing influences in the production and the showing of motion pictures and other forces that are bringing about a trend of better films.
Now, you gentlemen make motion pictures. How do you go about it? How do you find out that I'm going to make a certain kind of picture? Do you do it to please the man who puts up the money, or the public, or yourself, or what's the odds?
Steve, may I start the ball rolling? I don't think the public know what they want, really.
You don't?
No, if you were to ask the normal man and woman who go to see a picture what they wanted to see, they would probably recall the last best picture they've seen and say they'd like to see something like it, but they don't want to see it again. Once they've seen it, they've enjoyed it, but now they want to see something different. So it's upon us, the moving picture maker. It is our job to give them what we think is good for them.
Well, Jerry, when you say you think they don't know what they want...
Until they see
it. Do you mean that they... Do they know what they don't want?
No, I don't even think they know what they don't want. They're sometimes lured into a picture, perhaps by enticing advertising, and when they get in, sometimes they walk out in disgust. On the other hand, they can be fooled by an ad and go in and enjoy a picture.
You mind if I defend the public?
I don't agree
with us at all, because... I think the public very much do know what they want. And they may not articulate it. I don't think they can enumerate and list what they want. But I think our job very much is to anticipate what they do want. And very often it's related to what we do want. I don't think we're so isolated from the public, or we shouldn't be. I think we make that thing. I'm sure I do. I'm sure George says, I'm sure everyone actually starts out to try and make a good picture. Oh. And by good, they mean that thing that interests themselves a good deal, and they think it will interest others.
Well, Don, if what we select is a piece of subject matter does not interest a mass audience, then we'll be out of business rapidly. I mean, I have great faith in the public's ability to select a good picture when they see one, but I don't think there's any way they're ramming down their throats something that they don't want to see. Or something that has been seen too many times before.
I didn't say that.
You know, one thing that is interesting, whereas one often hears discussions about something called the box office, people seem to forget that the box office is a polling booth, and that every time people go to a movie, they vote. And every time they don't go to a movie, they vote. And in a sense, what you men are committed to is to a sensitive appraisal of how those votes may go in the future and try to make the kind of pictures which will make money, but which mean that in order to make money, you must attract an enormous audience of a size that no popular art in history before has ever had to have.
Mr. Stevens.
Mr. McCormick, it seems a question like this is always posed on the basis that all films are made the same way. How do you gentlemen make films? The term Hollywood, how does Hollywood make films? Hollywood seems to be a tent that's supposed to encompass a lot of things all alike. It seems to me they're all different approaches to making films in Hollywood. Some better than others. Some serving one group, others serving a particularly and special group. And I think the government of the film itself is the public. I know the public is my boss. There are a lot of people that stand between, I always figure, the public and myself in making the kind of film that I want. And that has to do with big company finance and distribution and all that sort of thing.
George, I think the important thing you have to consider is that there is, Steve was trying to arrive at, before we started this program, what ingredients do you need to make a successful picture? We know the formula for making a flop, and that is to repeat yesterday's hit. That's to try to do a carbon copy of something that's been a hit. And I know it's a positive fact that you cannot take something that's been bad in one bad picture and repeat it again in another picture. It won't work. Sometimes a series of bad ingredients will make a hit picture, the right chemistry and casting, and the right, and even the wrong subject matter sometimes.
So why do you call it a bad picture if it's successful? That interests me.
I call a bad picture, there have been pictures that we've all seen that have been big box office pictures, and we look at it and we ourselves, as super critics, I suppose, imagine that we would have done it the same way. Perhaps we're wrong. We've all made pictures which we thought were great, and they were flops.
Yeah, but you have to take into consideration that the audience's tastes change and change so rapidly. That's probably what you mean. I'm not putting words in your mouth, but
you can put them in my mouth.
It might be what you mean when you say they don't know what they want. I think they definitely do, but they change so often that what they want now is not necessarily what they may want a month from now. And unfortunately, if something is out and it's a success, and you know this, that then everyone is inclined, because there's a great deal of money in the making of a picture, a great deal of money invested, and you're inclined to say this is what they seem to like, let's make something like that. And by the time you come out, public taste has changed. Or everybody would now make The King and I, and the audiences would say, well, I'm tired of seeing The King and
I. Well, that's what
300
I
pictures
said before.
Let me get over here.
They don't know what they want.
Let me get over to Mr. Rosner.
I was trying to raise another point, which is that the people who make movies are not only concerned with making successful, profitable films. And one of the things that interested me in your comment, Jerry, you said sometimes a bad picture makes money. And what I suspect is that many men who make pictures which are profitable don't have the feeling of self-respect for which they yearn in films and through films in a way that is perhaps uncommon in other forms of industry. The feeling that they have done something worthwhile, the feeling that the picture counts, that the story is important, is often just as important as the desire to say, let's make a picture which will make a lot of money.
I think any time you start out on a venture in which you say, let's make a picture to make a lot of money, usually you're headed for disaster. There are no guarantees in our business. The only guarantee we know of is good taste and the ability to project something that is unusual and different. As soon as you become a hitchhiker on the screen, that is to follow yesterday's hit, you automatically, it's a road to disaster. We've seen it because by the time...
What about cycles of gangster cycles?
Well, it's like a carbon copy of anything. The first copy you read is clear and concise and crisp. By the time you get down to the fourth carbon, it's smudgy and you can't read it. These cycles are wrong. I think that they're getting all the cycles they want on television. Television has helped us a great deal by forcing us out of making big pictures and cycles.
I'm glad to hear a kind word from a movie man. Mr. Stevens.
Jerry, it seems to me you're kind of speaking for one kind of picture making, which is big company picture making. There is a big company, and a big company has to turn out a number of films, or else why consider this business of remake? Why consider following a pattern?
I don't say that.
The other kind of filmmaking, that is making a picture for the sake of the picture, directly for the interest of the public, and not the overall pattern of making films to meet a schedule of distribution or keep a group of stockholders happy. Mm-hmm. That kind of production, the individual production, the film that's going to present itself to the public on the basis of its own interest would never be imitation of something else.
Well, I agree
it would
with
be
you.
A new thing, it would be a new idea or a treatment of a theme once done before, freshly and based on its own kind of excitement it can create.
George, that's why I said before, it was that assembly line picture making is out the window. I think television right now has fallen into the deadly trap of having to make assembly line product, and they're going to have a high rate of mediocrity.
I'm very interested in what Leo said, that do picture makers make pictures for their own personal satisfaction, and how long will they remain in Hollywood if they do so, which is, I think, a footnote to it.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Or do they make pictures to make money, for the pictures to make money? The two things go hand in hand. The thing I think we're overlooking is that the misnomer that this is a motion picture industry, meaning business. Mm. It's not a business in that it's not related to the idea of business in which end products have to be similar. So that if Pepico tastes like Ipana, it would be an industrial crisis.
No, but that is...
We have to make each picture, just let me finish this. Mm. Each picture entirely different, and actually, if I would have a motto, I would say if you make yesterday's picture today, they won't come tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. But one of the things, it seems to me, which has always plagued the motion picture art is the fact that essentially it consists of an attempt to tell a story. But the story cannot be told except through machinery, through techniques, through very complicated devices which involve many people other than the central creative mind, whether it be the producer or the director or the writer.
Leo, I'd like to debate this 1 second. Mm-hmm. I think everything has to be comparative, and you're talking about the motion picture art as if it doesn't exist. And actually, it, compared to everything else, there are 70 theaters, 70 plays produced in New York, and a year 60 is a good season now. And 7 or 8 are flops. Everyone connected with those, with each one individually thinks it was a good play. The author thinks he wrote a good job. He did a good job of writing. He writes it uninhibited by the commercialism that Stevens talks about, that the bosses or the stockholders are watching him. He writes in the comfort of his own home, an idea that excites him. A New York stage producer reads many, many scripts to select one that he is interested in doing. He's not forced to do a picture because it's June 1st, or a play, rather. And with all of those things, and then he has out-of-town tryouts, he can rewrite, and has 7 out of 8 failures because it's not a machine-made business, never will be, never can be. You can only start a picture and say, I think the people will like this very much because it interests me so much, and then make it the best way you possibly can if you have any integrity, and then a hope, and it's a big, big gamble.
Let me go to one other item, if I may, gentlemen. Let's talk for a few minutes about the star system here. That's the thing, certainly, that people, when they think of Hollywood, they think of stars, think of movies. Is the star system good or is it evil?
Well, Steve, in Webster's Dictionary defines a star as a self-illuminating body. Now, we're discussing celestial bodies, but it also refers, of course, to a motion picture star. Now, unfortunately, there is no recipe that we know of that we can feed or manufacture to a person how to make him a star. It's some magic thing that they have that comes, this personality, that able to push them into the forefront. Now, there's such a handful of stars that go around that as we sit around trying to cast a picture, every studio and every independent producer has faced the same problem. There are about 10 people that everybody tries to get, and every time you stub your toe. I think eventually you have to have enough courage to go with new personalities. The only way we can create new stars is to give them the right stories, the proper setting for them. And if we wait around for the stars, which we've all waited patiently sometimes, we'll never get any pictures made.
Do the stars control your business? Well, when a star gets to be pretty big, does he...
Well, haven't you in the star system a key to the easy road of picture making? Again, we have the big organizations with a program of pictures to make a sparsity of good ideas. So how do they make these pictures work? They try to use a friendly face known to the public and then support them with some rudimentary story material and some other things of that nature. The most important thing in the star system to me is a good film. A film that stars in itself so that it will support the star and make that star refreshed and more attractive rather than the star appearing in another film. The star system has been found wanting without the good picture.
And we have to know what we're talking about by stars. Do we mean that person who attracts to the box office or that person best suited to play the part? My kid knows use Marlon Brando and Marilyn Monroe and Cary Grant in the same picture, if the story's any good at all, it's very likely to do good business. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe they don't fit the box.
The other night, I happened to see a picture called Bus Stop that had Marilyn Monroe in the lead, but had a new boy named Don Murray in the picture. And here was a boy I had never seen before, and he did not detract at all from the picture. If anything, he made the picture more interesting because he was a new face and because he added that curiosity that you do have about new people. So mm-hmm. I think there's a way you can build stars.
You know, people sometimes think that the early movie producers invented the star system. This is not true. They fought it. They were afraid of it. They resented it. There have always been stars. There were stars long before there were films, because the public in its responses tends to project onto certain kinds of persons those things which they love and cherish.
I argue that point.
This is a very interesting
point.
Yeah,
I'll tell you why I argue, because D.W. Griffith, when he made Birth of a Nation, did not sit down and say, let me see what stars I can get to make this picture. He made a film that I thought where the story was the main objective of the entire project.
Well, you may not know it, but you're agreeing with me. All I said was they didn't want stars.
Stars existed.
They didn't want stars. Now, one of the extraordinary things is that a person has within himself some quality which, in your terms, project. Take a man like Clark Gable. It happens that in the current issue of Look, he's on the cover. Why? We know that the face of Gable alone is of enduring interest to a great many men and women. And a man such as Gable or some of the other 10 that you have mentioned have over the years demonstrated beyond a shadow of a doubt that people enjoy going to watch them on the screen. Mm-hmm. This was not fabricated. You can't set out to take the ingredients that you think will make a star and make them. It has been tried, and it failed.
There's no room for lookalikes on the screen. The greatest disaster that can happen to any actor or actress is to have them try to sell themselves as another Clark Gable or another Monroe. I think there are just no room for lookalikes in stars, nor is there in types of stories you do. I mean, when George did Shane, there was an epidemic of carbon copies that came about in the next year or 2 years that followed Shane. I'm sure none of them hit the box office magnitude that Shane did, but there were carbon copies, and as I get, it began with the one man riding, coming into a
George
town.
George just made it better than was ever made. The story was not new. His handling of the story was new. We'd let him stop, or we'll start getting into agreement with each other.
I want to ask this question, too, because time's moving along, and it's one that often people ask. Why is there so much sex in movies?
When you say so much sex in movies, this is related again to what do we have to define what you mean?
Well,
sex is a very healthy thing. It's why we're all here to begin with. On this earth, at this table.
Do you overemphasize it?
I don't think the movies overemphasize sex any more than I picked
Look
up
magazine.
A Life magazine or any magazine and see the Elvis Presley spread, who he has never been in a picture, and the kids are getting hysterical.
Fox,
of course, you put a monkey in a picture, if that monkey would attract 50 million people.
I know that.
I don't mean Elvis Presley's a monkey, incidentally, because I have kids at home who are crazy about it.
Yeah, Mr. Rostin.
Why is there so much sex in pictures? Pictures are about people. The most powerful thing that the human being responds to is something biological. It's been this way for some millions of years. We think very often that the movies, for example, have invented the happy ending. Yet Aristotle, certainly a very austere student and critic of drama.
Did he get any screen credit? He has no screen credit,
but he will after this show. Aristotle came out with a very well-reasoned...
You might tell us what he wrote before Jerry...
philosophical discussion on why it is important for the point of view of the audience's catharsis or satisfaction to have a happy ending. The greatest playwrights in the world have taken but a few themes. Those themes must be themes recognizable to everybody or to a great mass of people. What are they? Love, hate, fear, death. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but
not
we're getting off. You're talking about something else.
When
you want to talk about sex,
I thought
you were discussing a pure, unadulterated, lascivious sex in the sense that we know it. I don't think that the pictures are full of that at all. I think that the pictures of most, every picture there is about love. And if sex is associated with love, it's a A very worthy cause, let's say.
Well, Don, one more important thing, Steve, I could say, talk about sex. I think sex is one of the few international languages that is understood all over the world where you don't need any dialogue to translate it. I mean, Marilyn Monroe or, let's say, Kim Novak on the screen.
Audrey Hepburn, Paramount Star.
Leo Rossin has Gable on the cover.
And I'm sure, George Stevens, you have a few stars we could mention here.
Yes, indeed. But, you know, it seems to me
Are
that
you interested in sex on the screen?
Well, it seems to me, if I am, I don't go to movies to find out about it, because the motion picture media is far behind all other means of communication in exploring and exploiting sex. Magazines, novels, everything else advance. And the movie delicately and cautiously follows. Don't worry about the film in leading the way here, or the film leading the way along any dangerous road, because the film so often follows the other thing, particularly follows the public's demand for certain kind of things. We're tremendously restrained here in American
film. George, just a minute, you talk about restraint. George, I don't think there is any subject that cannot be done on the screen if you do it with good taste. I don't think there's any subject that cannot be handled on the screen if... It's done so you don't offend, let me say, the innocent picture goer, or nor do you offend the intelligent picture goer.
Well, I say we are restrained. I don't say that we shouldn't be restrained, Jerry. Necessarily, reading something alone is very different than viewing something in a large group like you do with a film. There's a kind of restraint that's necessary in that kind of an experience. Everyone in the room together, your conversation is adjusted less pointedly than it would be to an individual.
Could we, for a moment, talk about foreign movies? Good many of them have made quite an impact here in America. And this, of course, is of great concern to you gentlemen, I assume. Why is that?
It isn't of great concern at all. I think that's another mistake. I think that any foreign picture, and I know this from an executive experience, that's a good picture and that audiences, American audiences, want to see, will get top playing time. And I certainly give you now a Paramount picture called War and Peace, which will play the very top theaters. It's a foreign-made picture. And has popular appeal. Where we're inclined to say critically, I mean by critically the critics, say foreign pictures are more intelligent or better than American pictures and that they seem to have to say certain things that we're restrained from saying, is only that we, a very simple mathematical thing is you see the good foreign pictures.
You mean you see only the good
ones? You see only the good ones. If you saw most foreign pictures, if you saw most English musicals, you would... not go to movies
I would like to say this, Don, that foreign pictures are very healthy to this extent. First of all, nobody has a monopoly on making good pictures. You can make a good picture in Japan, Italy, but what it does do, it does stimulate us out here. The new faces they bring are usually incorporated eventually in American films, whether it's Gina Olabrigida.
Sophie Lawrence going in The Desire Under the Elms.
Sophie Lawrence.
Please mention it.
But I think that it's healthy, that we are essentially a worldwide business, and our interest must be on a worldwide basis, so we must be interested in what the German government is doing, or the French, or the English, or the Japanese.
An interesting comment on American film has to do with this same War and Peace, a great film, that abroad they called upon our distinguished American director, King Vidor, to make the film. And he did the most brilliant piece of work.
That film runs over 3 hours, and I understand that your new one, Giant, which comes out in October, will run over 3 hours. Is this a trend?
Well, it's an accidental development due, I suppose, to the fact that that films are in a kind of a new era. They're not subscribing so much to the jukebox distribution and the jukebox double feature, the easy distribution that companies followed so long due to some liberalizing things, the Cinerama and other things of that kind. It gives the film an opportunity to run longer, to be in a theater longer, perhaps to be more rewarded financially and justify greater expenditure. I think we'll find that it's a true basis for a trend, and there will be many longer films.
George, wouldn't you say the question would be regarding the length of a film is how long is it good? I mean, we've seen pictures, shorts that run 20 minutes that are too long. I mean,
shorts particularly.
Gone with the Wind was 3 hours and 35 minutes.
And too short. You could
see longer. The longer form is so interesting because don't we look at a film itself? A real film is almost a short story form. It's simply that. You get to a great novel or a novel in a film, it just can't be done in an hour and a half without using some stream of consciousness tale-telling like reading. 3 hours, I know, I found this in a 3-hour and 15-minute film. It has to be very fast from beginning to end, and then it just barely reaches the stature of a novel. I mean that you can go into the various facets and streams of storytelling and put them together.
Mr. Ross.
On the question of foreign films, one thing I think is worth attention. Very often we see films made in Europe which are much simpler than American pictures, which are made for considerably less money, and which therefore can be made for special audiences of a type we don't have in America. Mm-hmm. The American film has to hit a triple or a homer, to use a homely analogy. Mm-hmm. If you make a film in England or in Italy for considerably less money, then it would have to cost you in America. It doesn't mean that Hollywood, I think, sets out to waste money. It doesn't. But that the costs of producing pictures are so enormous in the United States as compared to some European or Japanese countries that in a sense you have preempted a certain type of subject matter which the smaller artist
Leo,
or the
you
smaller
are, you're overlooking another point that you've traveled in Europe, and why is it, if I'm going to defend American pictures, and that they're just better made. We've been in the business longer, we know more about it, and we know how to make pictures better than they do. And they occasionally had a daring story that we happen to see. But you go to Paris, you go to Rome, you go to London, any place where American pictures are playing, and they certainly don't want to book them and over their own pictures, but the people are waiting in line to get into the American picture and not see their own. Down the Champs-Élysées, the French are standing in line for blocks trying to see the American pictures.
Yes.
And then next door, the French pictures are playing, and no one's going to see. Why don't they go to see their own pictures?
Why don't we bring the foreigners? We ought to bring the foreigners over here. Have all the Frenchmen and Germans come over here.
They're
and
not
stand
too dissimilar. We're not too far apart, are we?
We have a few seconds left, gentlemen. I'd like to get your quick reaction to television versus the movie business.
Mm-hmm. I think television, as I said earlier, is finally monopolizing all the mediocrity in America. They have a problem of trying to turn out in 1 week what all Hollywood and the New York theater turns out in 1 year.
Maybe we ought to get off this subject.
Well, perhaps we're going to find television and the motion picture one thing eventually. It certainly looks to that, just a means of projection of this extraordinary visual technique, just beginning. I think the time will come when television is free.
I'm sorry.
You can have your pay television.
I'm sorry, I must interrupt, Mr. Stevens. I don't like to, but our time is up. And we certainly do thank you, gentlemen, for being with us today. Don Hotman of Hotman Productions, George Stevens, director-producer of Giant and Shane, Jerry Wald, who now heads Wald Productions, and Leo Rosten, author and critic of Look Magazine.